Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Sober Indians Wednesday Night Live. I'm Karen, and tonight we are bringing on Lori again to continue the conversation from her last appearance on the show. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Karen.
How you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm doing really good, especially now that the weather is lightened up on us and it's not minus 50. So that's a real blessing.
It is. It felt really good here today, too. I think we were probably in the low to mid 60s today for the first time in a while. So I'm thrilled with that. I wanted to thank you for coming back on to talk some more.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. So my first question to you is, I know the last time we were talking, you were talking about some of the programs that you were involved in, and I was curious as to which one, because you sound like you have a lot of passion for each and every one. So if you would, if you wanted to, we could go back into that and kind of explain when you found that you had that passion for these different types of programs and the things that you do.
Well, I guess what I could share this evening is, not so much with respect to programs, but about being part of community and being a helper in the community, because that's where my passion lies, is being a helper. I really enjoy that type of participation, where I can be not so much right at the forefront of everything, but I'm there and I'm able to help out in whichever way I can. And in our background, in our way of being, we call that the Anoshtabes, or not, for me it would be, I guess, Anoshtabes Kwe. A female or a woman helper. So when I get to help out, I'm just doing the absolute best that I can, and I'm putting forward my most sincere effort, and I'm doing it in a way that I'm being mindful of being respectful, being caring, being considerate, being patient, all of those good attributes that we try to strive as human beings to be, right? And in being the helper, and in being the helper that I get to be, especially being a sober helper, right? That sobriety is a huge key and vital to being what I would perceive as a good helper. Like I said before, I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for anyone. So by finding sobriety and being able to be a helper, that has expanded my life so much more, not only mentally, emotionally, physically, but spiritually, and also with my identity about who I am. And with our history of colonization, sobriety has been a big struggle for me and many people surrounded around me, like through family and through generations. So in order to participate in that helping that I do, especially in a spiritual aspect, sobriety is very necessary. So with the helping in the community and that aspect, I do it from the helping that I do is first and foremost from a female aspect, because all I know is my femaleness. I can't help from a male perspective. I have some, you know, insight into that, having a dad and having sons. Those, you know, I've been a witness to that, but I haven't lived that. So with the helping that I provide is from a female perspective. And with the sobriety, becoming a sober helper, it wasn't an easy thing to do, because when you become addicted and your addiction becomes your coping mechanism, it can take you away from some of the life helping that you're able to do. Like, I had no idea at all that I would ever be the helper that I get to be, like the helper in a ceremonial way, the helper as a grandmother. And it really helps me with my sobriety, because I have a sense of purpose, not only in a professional way, but also in my, you know, I'm feeding that spiritual aspect of myself while I get to be a helper in the community. And of course, being a helper is you need to be humble. You need to be non-judgmental, you know, from my perspective. Like I said, I can only speak for myself. So when I'm being a helper, I'm not judging. I'm not there to judge anyone. So if people are coming along and they're seeking that help and I'm helping and there's, you know, sharing of struggles and life challenges, there to judge what's going on with that person. I'm there to just be a helper in the best way that I can with the tools that I have. And becoming sober has been a really good tool to have. It can be a very challenging thing to become sober and to stay sober. But that doesn't mean that we're not part of our community circle just because we have slip-ups or we're still struggling with it. Everybody should always be part of the circle.
That makes sense to me. excuse me. Do you think that for a lot of instances that there's a lot of peer pressure involved that kind of brings that on, not only with some of the home issues that happens that brings addiction into the play?
Well, not only peer pressure, but also if it's become a way of life, like I had shared before, instead of going through your rites of passage as an Indigenous person, there was this there was this process of becoming part of alcohol once you became an adolescent. And it was very acceptable, and it didn't even feel like pressure. It almost felt natural to walk right into that use of alcohol because of the coping that was going on with the way that life had become, because our identity was was interrupted. Our way of life was interrupted. Our cultural practices were interrupted. Our spiritual practices were interrupted. So we were taught to be, we were being taught or assimilated into this different human being, but there was so much trauma attached to it, and so much, and then with that trauma, coping with alcohol became a norm. So we had that aspect of it as we became adolescents, and within our family dynamic, if there was alcohol involved, myself and some of my friends, it became a normal thing to do as you became an adolescent, to join the table of addictions and start using that alcohol. But also within the peer pressure circle, it was just as prevalent. Like we would, in order to look for fun or to make sure that we were having fun as we went into our adolescence, alcohol had to be a part of it. It was almost something that was necessary in order for us to, you know, in order for us to have fun. So it's something that is, it's something that's learned. It's not, you know, it's not like you just wake up one day and you're an adolescent and it's like, okay, I'm going to be turning 13 now. I better start drinking. It's something that you see and you watch and you witness and that you become a part of. So it becomes a cycle. It becomes a generational thing. And it's been a hard thing to break. It's really hard to break out of that cycle of I like to focus more on the coping rather than the addiction, because the reason we fall into addictions is because we're coping with something. So if you take away a group of people's identity, language, way of life, spiritual practices, you know, how much more is there left? And then on top of that, you layer a bunch of trauma and you layer a bunch of violations, you layer a bunch of abuses. You know, that is a lot to sit with and try to live with every day.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think that people need to understand that it does happen over time and that there's a lot more to it. Before I started into this show, I knew some about addiction, but I didn't know how deeply it went. So, and the more we talk, the more I learn from this. And I think it's great that you're sharing your story and everybody else does it comes on, because it needs to be told. You know, people need to understand, you know, there's more to it than just going out and having a drink and then, okay, well, I have to have one again. That there's a lot more to it than just that.
Exactly. And it's not, and like you said, it's not just an immediate thing. Sometimes it can be, but it's different for everybody, right? Each and every one of us is a different human being. And we always need to remind ourselves of that, because like my perception and the way I see the world is not the same as the next person next to me, and we need to respect that. So like for my story, the use of alcohol, you know, there was the change and the feeling of having a good time and that, you know, that euphoria of being high on the alcohol and being among friends and having a good time. But then other things would start getting stirred up inside of me by using that. Mm-hmm. And not even knowing what I was sitting with, and all of that being stirred up and creating another layer of challenges or problems or trauma, because of coping with alcohol. So then you have this, you know, you have this layering of life experience, and if you hadn't dealt with your issues, or you don't even know what they are, that's where my trauma came up that I wasn't even aware of. And I started, like I said before, I think I started tasting alcohol when I was 10, 11, something like that. And it took me till, you know, it took me till my late 40s to realize exactly what it was I was carrying. So it's been like, it's been a lifetime of figuring myself out because of all of the polluting of addiction, and, you know, feeling bad about using alcohol to cope, and then creating more problems, and then adding on to the depression that I was already experiencing because of life trauma. And as we know, alcohol itself is a depressant. So once the good time is over, and if you go too far with it and you use it in a way where you're not cognizant of what your actions are, or you have a blackout, you know, you're trying to figure out what happened in your life the next morning. That's a real terrible feeling. And I definitely do not miss that feeling at all. No, but like I said, for the coping with life and the progression of needing alcohol in order to function, that's not something that usually, like, well, not for me anyways, that happened immediately. And it's not something that I openly made known. There was times when I would use alcohol and I would do it secretly, so I wouldn't be questioned about why I was using alcohol. But I was using it to cope. It was my go-to to manage. Like, even once I got to that place where I wasn't blacking out sometimes, or I wasn't cognizant of and in total control of my words and my actions, I still continued to use it to cope, and it was because of my life trauma. But what that ended up segueing into was that knowledge of what was happening to me, and starting to be part of community and having those doorways open for me in terms of who I was, who I am, that spiritual aspect of who we are as Indigenous people. You know, that's what helped me get to where I am now, you know, which is being a sober Indian, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, when I go on to Sober Indian, it helps me when I'm having a tough day, and I read the shares that are on there, and how much sobriety there is, and how much struggling there is, and that truth helps me, and it gives me hope. Because I don't ever try to say I'm fully healed, I'm fully recovered. I don't try to set the bar for myself like that. Like, anything can happen in life, and things can change in an instant. So when I'm reading the stories of all of the sober Indians that we have on the page, it gives me a lot of inspiration, and I feel that sense of community. You know, we all have a common goal, and mm-hmm. and with that sobriety comes a better life.
True. It's a loving community too. Very loving, very caring. And I think that's great, because I think you have to have that support like that in each other, leaning on each other the way everyone does in the group. And it's amazing.
It is. It's so nice, you know, when somebody will post and say that, you know, I've been sober for this many days or this many months or this many years, and all of the good comments and all of the coming together to celebrate somebody. You know, it's so mm-hmm. beautiful to see that. And then at the same time, mm-hmm. you know, when unfortunately we do lose our loved ones to addiction. And also that there's that support there for members who have lost their loved ones to addiction. And so for me, that is my connection to identifying as a sober Indian, and it does help me a lot.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. What do you want to see in the future to happen for First Nation people in general that are dealing with addiction? I mean, I personally would love to see everybody completely, totally sober, and I think it would be a great thing if that happened for the ones who are suffering with addiction at this point. But what would you want to see?
Well, if I could make a big my biggest wish list that I'm able to make, first and foremost is to have all of the accommodations in order to heal from the colonial and genocidal impacts, because we're still living them today. And if things just remain the way they are today, we're going to keep living them for another couple generations. And that isn't the relationship that our ancestors intended for us. Those promises were made, with the pipe that we would, you know, that we would promise to each other that we would carry out a good relationship for as long as the sun shines and the grass grows and the rivers flow. And as soon as the land taking took place, that the, you know, the intent and the spirit of the treaties completely, you know, almost completely went away. But we're able to persevere. So in order for sobriety to be something that's tangible and real, a lot of healing has to take place. And the trauma has been horrific. The trauma has been deemed genocide for Canada. You know, we just recently had a report on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls released a couple of years ago, with 231 recommendations of how to address the impact. But we also have the Truth and Reconciliation Commission recommendations. We have the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples recommendations. We have all kinds of recommendations to be carried out. But with the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls final report, the finding of what was committed is the commission of genocide, and that is like trying to wipe out a specific group of people or separating them from one another. And so, with us and our sobriety and our, you know, the way that addiction has a hold on us, there is a lot of healing that needs to happen. We need to feel good in our own skin. You know, that's what I always, that's how I gauge things, is how comfortable I am in my brown skin. And I don't want to feel different or like there's something wrong with the color of my skin, or that I'm really different because I choose to wear my ribbon skirt or my cultural items or regalia. Mm-hmm. So of course with that comes acceptance, and we're going through this reconciliation era. But there's really nothing for us to reconcile because we didn't do anything wrong. You know, our ancestors with the pipe had promises made and made sure that we were going to be taken care of, because they were looking seven generations ahead when they signed those treaties, and starting in 1871, well, the numbers treaties, looking at those ones. So they were looking ahead, way ahead. And for where we're sitting at now, you know, I'm not fluent in my Anishinaabe Mohin language. I wish I was, but I'm working at it. But we also have to work, and we have to find a way to sustain ourselves in this type of society while we're trying to heal and regain the things that have been deliberately taken away from us. So there are so many things that need to happen in order for First Nations to heal on Turtle Island.
I agree. Acknowledgement, for one, to acknowledge what happened, instead of putting it on the back burner like it's been done for so many years. I think that would be a great beginning. And the missing and murdered women needs to be looked at more than what it is, than what they do, in order to find them and bring them back to their families. And hopefully the majority of them they would find alive, but that would be my wish for that.
Right. Well, we get apology after apology, and these recommendations come forward, and ultimately what we need a lot of the time is resources. We need resources in order to carry out this process of reconciliation, this process of addressing missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. We need resources to do that, and First Nations are the most impoverished individuals on Turtle Island.
Mm-hmm.
And in Canada, particularly, out of the whole mass of land, we're only occupying up to less than 2% of all of Canada. So we've got a very small land base, and we're still dealing with things like overcrowding, potable water, all of those things. And then we also have UNDRIP. We have the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. States in there that, you know, we have the right to carry out our self-determination as we know it and as we see it. And that's great, but we also have responsibilities. We have a responsibility to the land. We have a responsibility to the water. We have a responsibility to all of the resources. And it's really tough to try and do all of those things when you're living a colonial assimilated life and you want to return back to the land. It's not so easy to just do it because those sustainable ways of being that we used to have, many of us don't have them anymore.
Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure what to say. I know it's a very hard subject, but it's the truth, and people, you know, need to know what's happening and still happening, because I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, you live one way every day, and then in your mind you kind of go with, okay, everybody's living okay. There's some that have a little bit more and some a little bit less, but everybody's doing good. In all reality, that's not the case. And I absolutely agree with you about resources. It needs to be there at so it can be used and put into effect in order to do the things that needs to be done.
Absolutely. And there needs to be, and as well, there needs to be a stewardship of sustainability, because we're dealing with what one of my awesome friends, Isaac, always says is an ecological collapse of Mother Earth. So there's so much work that needs to get done, but in reality, we're still fighting against ourselves in terms of how we're trying to cope with that colonial impact and those traumas and that intergenerational harm that's been passed down. And it's really difficult to try and fight for what it is you hope to achieve when you're still healing yourself.
I'm not sure what questions to ask at this point. It kind of makes me, for me to hear this, it makes me very, very quiet, so to speak, because I don't know how to address. But at the same time, it's good because, you know, like I said, people need to know this. They need to understand that although, you know, there's a lot of quiet within the community, there's a lot of stuff going on that's not being told or not being seen. So it's not necessarily everything okay.
Well, we've been taught to be quiet. Mm-hmm. We've been, you know, my parents were taught to be quiet in residential school. My grandparents were taught to be quiet in residential school. Secrets and shaming came from those schools. And it makes sense. And a lot of violence and a lot of abuses came from those schools. And it does make sense that that's something like coping with, you know, coping through alcohol in order to deal with that, to deal with that silence. Because a lot of times, like I said, even I did it. I would cope in secrecy through alcohol. And, but it's not something to be ashamed of. It is tragic. It's terrible. You know, I've shed many, many tears over where we've been, where we've come from. But we're also a very beautiful people, very resilient, and very creative in the way that we survive. And one thing that is a very common thing is we survive with laughter. So with the silence, we've started becoming less silent. look at what we have. We have something called Sober Indians, and we have almost, how much, 80,000 now? 80,000 members. It's getting close to that.
I think it's
around getting close to that range. And that's amazing. You know, that is such a beautiful thing that we're, despite everything that we've been through, we're able to speak our truth. At least we're speaking our truth about coping through addiction and wanting to stop. But the pain that comes from that coping is where we're gradually beginning to open up. And that is an amazing and courageous thing to see and to witness. Because like I said before, I thought I was going to die with all of my trauma and never speak about it to anyone ever in my life. But I have started speaking about it. Like I said, I suffer from PTSD and I suffer from some memory loss. So some of those memories I don't have, but some of them are. And I've gone through these periods of, why do I only remember all the bad things? Where's all the good stuff? Because there was a lot of good stuff. Because I did have, you know, I did have a good upbringing despite the amount of alcohol that was around us when we were growing up, and we were able to hang on to our living off the land sustenance way of living. So there have been lots of good gifts in there, but that silence of not telling the secrets about the bad things that have happened to us, that silence has been so, so deafening, and it's really tough to talk about those traumas of human violations, you know, sexual violations, physical violence, death, suicide. Those are realities, but we're talking and we're sharing more and more all the time, and through a mechanism like Sober Indians, that's giving us the opportunity. Because I've been on there for quite a few years. I can't remember how many years, but it's been quite a few, and I've seen the progression of how we're starting to share on there. And it was before, it was mostly just about trying to stay sober. But now we're starting to share a little bit here and there about our trauma. And that takes so much courage. And it's hard to read when it's there, but I'm so glad it's there. But just like me, like, I can share things that I know others aren't ready to share, and that's okay too. Everybody, like I said, everybody is on their own journey and will do things in our own time. And so I really commend the individuals who share about that personal trauma that triggered the coping and the addiction. It's amazing to see that.
I agree. I was curious, what do you think, as a whole, all of us as a whole, should do in order to break...
Sorry, could you say that again?
What do you think that all of us as a whole can do in order to break the cycle of addiction and uplift more? And you're right, Sober Indians, the group, it's an amazing group, and we see that every day, and I think it's fantastic. But on the outside, the people that are not inside this group or what have you, what can they do in order to help break this cycle, basically?
Well, we have to really support each other, and we have to be kind to each other. But that doesn't mean that we become doormats. You know, when I say that, I think about a fierce mama bear, and if you mess with a fierce mama bear's cubs, you know, she's gonna take care of them. So we also have to, you know, we also have to protect ourselves. So as a whole, you know, it really helps for myself is when I have that support. I have that support, and I know I have community support. I know I have family support. I have friends that support me. You know, I have a network, and that's part of this big, you know, we're all just a little piece of this huge web of life. So having that support and having that, you know, that support that's unconditional, non-judgmental, where we're lifting each other up as much as we can instead of tearing each other down, because that's another thing that has come from residential schools is lateral violence. And lateral violence is when we're lateral violence is bullying, gossiping, and excluding somebody from a group of people, exclude one person. When in residential school, you weren't allowed to speak your language. So if some spoke their language, they would get made fun of. Or if some took, you know, conformed and spoke English really well, then they wouldn't no longer be Indian. So there was this lateral violence that got perpetuated, and the educators, the nuns and the priests figured out a way to pit the students against each other. And with this lateral violence was learned there, and it came into our communities, and we're still dealing with it today. So for me, like, I do workshops on lateral kindness, and I incorporate our seven teachings, and it doesn't mean that you're a perfect person, because nobody's perfect. We walk in between all of those emotions that we carry, right? Love, hate, jealousy, support. We can be so many different things as fluid human beings. But it's so important to have that support and have that, you know, we all want a witness in our lives that says that are witnessing our journey. Our journey is ours to live, but it really helps us to have that acknowledgement of having a witness to our journey, and that's what we do together as a collective. So as a whole, as we're going through our life, it's really important to have that support, that love, that kindness, that understanding, that compassion, that mindfulness, that empathy, not sympathy, empathy. So as much positive attributes that we can show to a human being, you know, those are the things that we should be providing each other with, especially when we're going through addictions. That's what helped me is, you know, just one person sometimes coming and saying, you know what, I know it's tough for you, but I'm here and I care about you and I love you and I want you to be okay and I want you to live a good life. Because it's hard to feel that for yourself when you're so wrapped up in an addiction because of things that you're coping with.
Wow. Well, I think that those are good words, and I'm hoping that everybody that's on listening to Matt really takes all this to heart, because I think this is what it's going to take for everything to start changing, and the acknowledgement of the bad that's happened and everybody coming together and just helping each other in order to break the cycle, literally.
Yeah, and but the thing is we're not going to have everything, you know, as perfectly as we wanted. Life has its challenges even in those sober days, it can have lots of challenges. And even when we have the best intents and we have the best attitude and we have all of that support, you know, there's a lot of life things that can really make life hard to manage. But it's okay to talk about these things. And that's that silence piece, is when we run into conflict, we have to learn to better manage our conflicts. It's okay to disagree, but respectfully disagree. But it's not okay to tear each other down. It's not okay to tear each other down. And this happens on social media all the time. And we have our Sober Indians Facebook page. And so with social media, it's so much easier to chime in. And unfortunately, sometimes in a negative way. But it's so good that there are people that are out there watching out for these things. But it's also an opportunity to learn. It's also an opportunity to talk and say, you know what, maybe that's not such a great thing to state right now. Or if it's targeted at a certain group of people, those types of things. So we're going to continue to have our challenges, but the more we focus on flipping those challenges around and those negative situations into positive learning situations, you know, we'll be all the better for it together. Because now in my life and being sober, because when I first started getting sober, I was thinking, you know, things are going to be great because I'm sober now. But then you have to deal with life sober, and life doesn't stop happening. Bad things don't stop happening because you're sober. So it becomes like, what? This is tough. This is way tougher. So when that happens, it's so important to have that support system around. And because life can get pretty lonely once you get sober, especially if your circle is not about being sober, right? So it's really important to continue to try and find that support. Like when I started becoming sober, I would take my daughters to this. They called them dry socials. So I would take them, and it was so different because everybody's sober, children are there, they're safe, and there's lots of dancing, there's lots of laughing, there's prizes, and what an amazing community I walked into when I started going to those dry socials. So I was blessed enough to find a community that I was able to function in and still continue to have fun, and also even include my children. So within those circles, there's lots of beautiful things, but we have to be realistic. There's lots of challenging things too, but it's so important that we're learning to use our voices now. And like I said, it's amazing and it's beautiful to see that there are individuals on Sober Indians sharing some of their some of their own personal story. And that takes a lot of courage, and it gives me a lot of hope that we're healing a little bit more every day, and we're helping each other heal, and it's an okay thing to do together.
Beautifully said. We're coming down to the last 8 minutes of the show. Well, 9 minutes of the show, sorry. And I wanted to know if there was anything else that you would like to say or anyone you wanted to acknowledge before the end of the hour.
I would just like to thank all the people in my life who have been there for me and who have never given up on me and who have influenced me in good ways and that love me. You know, my family, my children, my grandchildren, the communities that I come from. I'm just so thankful that we've come as far as we have and that we're talking about the things that we're talking about now. And we have places like this to share. And, you know, through Sober Indians, it really means a lot to me to know that I have that family and to know that that doorways are being opened up so that there is a place to talk about this and there is a place to talk about it safely and respectfully. And I really appreciate that. And of course, all my acknowledgement goes to Kishi Manitou, because without Kishi Manitou, I wouldn't be here. So I say thanks for that.
Thank you for coming on and sharing and talking. I think it's been a really informative show tonight, and I'm just honored that I have the opportunity to speak to you and many others that come on and speak openly about their stories, because it is something that's you have to be very courageous to do that, and it takes a lot of strength to be able to share your story like you have.
Well, definitely it does, and anybody can do it. But like I said, no pressure. Do it in your own time. Do it in your own way, because mm-hmm. your journey is yours.
Exactly. So we still have like 6 minutes left. Is there anything else you just want to chat about for the last 6 minutes?
In terms of the opportunity to come on a show like this and to be able to share, what I'd like to share about it for myself is, I don't know, when I did it the first time, I was nervous. But after I did it, something did a little bit for me. And it was like sharing my story with the whole universe, because it's you know, to me, with the radio, it's like it's through all the waves of the universe. And something shifted for me. And so if you're thinking about it, if you're thinking about coming on and sharing, I strongly encourage you to do it. And like I said, it wasn't like I was just absolutely pumped to do my first interview. I was nervous. And it is hard to share, but there is an opportunity, and you don't have to share everything. And if you want to come on and share, only share what you're comfortable with. And like I said, for me, this is a safe space for me to be able to share my story. So I encourage you to think about coming on and sharing your story as a sober Indian.
Absolutely, and thank you. The show is a very relaxed show. I wouldn't want anyone to feel pressured into saying anything that they don't want to talk about. So I want to make that point. And I really appreciate you coming on and talking. Again, it's been very informative. Some of it's been difficult to listen to. But that's needed, though. That's the main thing about it. Some of the stuff that we hear needs to be heard, no matter how difficult that might be, because it may open somebody's eyes, and that's what needs to be done. And I just wanted to, thank you for doing that. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for opening yourself up. And in a sense, the nervousness, because you felt vulnerable at first, I'm sure, because you were talking on air. But I'm glad that it gave you the sense that you do now and being comfortable to come on and talking and sharing. So I'm grateful for having you on. So I wanted to go ahead and tell everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. Oh, you're very welcome. You're more than welcome to come on anytime and talk at any time.
Thank you so much.
I want to thank everybody. You're welcome. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight and listening. And hope you got something from this show tonight. I really do. Take something with you and hold it close, because her words are very true and they come from the heart. And I just want to wish everybody a good evening and good night. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Miigwech.